This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me for the next hour on Sirius 219, XM 201, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net, and of course, podcast on major podcast platforms each and every week. Well, last week on Trainer Talk, you heard from Kentucky Derby winning trainer Eric Reed, who told his emotional story of overcoming unimaginable tragedy to reach the sport's highest pinnacle with that Derby win. Well, today I visit with a trainer preparing to saddle what is likely to be the longest shot in this year's Preakness on Saturday, and he'll be hoping to take a page from Eric Reed's book and find himself standing in the winner's circle at Old Hilltop. Please join me in welcoming trainer Kevin McCathen to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Kevin, really appreciate the time.
Hey, glad to be here.
You know, I know that you're going back and forth. The Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale is happening this next week, and of course the breezes are going on. There's a lot happening now, plus you're trying to get ready for the Preakness. How on earth are you keeping all these balls up in the air?
you got to keep juggling fast. You got to keep jogging and juggling fast. But I got a great crew, and they make it a lot easier on me.
Well, Fenwick is 50-1 on the morning line, and I just referenced the fact that we saw the Derby winner at 80-1, longest shot in the race there, pull off that shocker. What's the key? Can Fenwick? Obviously, you think he has a shot, but can he do it? Can he shock the world?
I think for sure. I think we have a shot, and we didn't enter just to get tickets, so we come to run him off his feet. I think that, we ran in the bluegrass, and unfortunately it did not play out the way we needed it to. And so the horse, sure, making 50-1, making 80-1, you can make him whatever you want. But if it goes his way, they're going to have a hard time outrunning him.
What is his way? What's the key to giving him a shot?
What, he's a big, powerful, curling, big horse, but he wants to be free running, you know. So I ain't saying he needs the lead, but he really doesn't want to get started and stopped and started and stopped. So, hopefully we bounce out of the gate a little better. He was a little flat-footed in the bluegrass, and next thing he got pinched off going into the first turn. And, so that really hurt our spot, our chances. And, so hopefully we bounce out of there and he gets a good run to the first turn. Like I said, he doesn't have to be on the lead, but, I'm just hoping he's got such a high cruising speed. And, so I want him to hit his best pace and carry on, and hey, at 50-1, all them boys might say, just let him go, we'll catch him later, but they might never see him again.
Well, that's the hope and the dream. And I remember you and I talking before the Bluegrass Stakes. We had recorded an interview that aired on my Saturday morning Equine Forum show, and you were joined by owner Jeremiah Rudan. And that was kind of the plan in the Bluegrass. You wanted to get away well. You wanted to get him on the lead and say, hey, catch me if you can.
Well, I don't want to drag race anyone. That's really not what I'm in it to do.
Yeah.
I just want him to hit that high gear and just have a fair run at it. In the bluegrass, he got shut down. He got kind of pinched off going in the first turn, which the whole plan, was for Paco to kick him out of there and get through that turn. And then
he got dead stopped in the first turn. And then, you know, on the back stretch, he started to make another, you know, move, but he was still buried inside and got stopped again. And then, you know, then it was just loping on home, you know. It was kind of just like, let's finish up and start over. So he come out of the race in really good order. And so it was time to run, you know. And I'm not necessarily, you know, going out to saying he's the greatest horse in the race, but he deserved to be there, and he deserves a fair run at it.
You make the move from Paco to Florent Giroux. How did that all come about?
Well, basically, that's a great question. Ron was here and available, and obviously Paco's not. And like I said, I didn't think that, you know, it just happened. We didn't try to stick with Paco. I think I like our pick, and it wasn't a move against Paco. It just, who was here, who was available, and you know, who we could get. So
I mentioned the owner, Jeremiah Rudan, and when the two of you joined me on that Equine Forum show, Kevin, it was so enjoyable because of your chemistry and your longstanding friendship. Tell me about that relationship.
Well, you know, it's just kind of Jeremiah, you know, he's a special guy, and he has such a passion for the game and is actually just getting started. You know, he's this is his first couple horses, and he loves it. I mean, he loves it. So I enjoy just being around and being able to be around someone like that, you know, that actually, you know, every day. You could call it aggravating and you could call it not, but he'll call me 10 times a day just to see how my horses are doing, not his, just how my day's going, you know. So he just loves it. And, you know, we've had a great time. We've enjoyed each other, and he's got a real passion for it. So it kind of sparks up, makes it fun.
Doesn't it make the game a lot more enjoyable when you're doing it with people like that you enjoy being around, that have a common interest, that have the enthusiasm that you have?
Oh man, it just changes everything. You know, it kind of obviously there's a financial part of this whole game, but that you know, I work just so I can have enough money to play with horses. Other than that, I'm going to be playing with horses if I make any money or not. So, and like I said, he has a burning passion for it that does get you excited. That is neat and just to see him and see how he loves and treats his horses is great.
Talking with
and I believe he deserves a shot. You know, I believe both of them do. I believe Fenwick deserves a shot. And hey, why not take a guy like this and give him a chance?
Yeah. Now he's from Canada, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He's Canadian, but does he have a farm in Florida? If I remember correctly.
No, he doesn't have a farm in Florida. Just my farm. I have a farm in Florida. But,
okay.
You know, he's trying to get more interest in Florida. And trying to do some different things. He does have property there, and he's doing some different things, you know. So he's a big land developer, you know. So they're mover shakers. They're different than me and you. I go and I feed my horses and pet his, and he's got a lot of stuff going on.
Talking with trainer Kevin McCathen here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Fenwick 50-1 on the morning line. He'll go for Kevin and for owner Jeremiah Rudan in Saturday's Preakness Stakes. And again, if history is any indication with this year's Triple Crown, he may be sitting with the right horse coming into this year's Preakness. Who knows? Kevin, let's go back to the beginning. Your family, certainly no strangers to being around good horses. Take me back to the beginning. Were you always around horses as a little boy?
Sure. My dad was a horse trainer, so I was basically, you know, I like everyone says, raised in a barn. Well, I kind of was, and so always I was kind of raised in South Florida because my dad trained in that circuit when we were younger, Gulfstream, Calder, you know, Hialeah. So I was raised down south, and We moved out of Miami in 1983. We moved to Ocala. And so then both me and my brother went on and started training horses. And then, you know, we were training a bunch of bad horses, which was no fun. And so that's why in 1989 we started McCaffin Brothers, and that's when we started breaking and training and pen hooking and selling horses.
When you were getting started in those early days and you made that switch over to McCaffin Brothers, were there some challenges to getting started, or did it just kind of click right away?
Well, I mean, there's always challenges to getting started, I guess. You know, you start like anything. We started out, we were both still having to gallop horses for other people, and then we had a handful of our own. And then, you know, then it grows and grows, and we had some great luck and some great shots. And, you know, and next thing you know, we got lucky and got some great horses and great owners. So, but yeah, nothing was easy. There was nothing given to us, for sure.
Do you remember the first really big horse, the big name horse that you were around?
Me and my brother's first big horse was Storm Tower.
Okay.
Storm Tower won the Wood Memorial. He was favorite in the Kentucky Derby. We had purchased him for $12,500 at Keeneland, and we took him to Fazek Tipton, Miami at the time, which was at Calder, and sold him to Benny Perkins for $245,000. Mr. Hess owned him, and he went on to run out, you know, I don't know, a million five or six, and he was a good horse.
What are some of the things that
my first big horse probably was November Snow. She was the first crop out of Stormcat, and so we were very fortunate. To really touch some special horses, and when you do that, you get to figure out there's a difference. They're different. The horses are different.
They really are, aren't they?
They are. They're different. I mean, and you know, there's good horses and solid horses and nice horses, but them select you know, super horses, they're just different. They breathe a different kind of air.
Well, I know you haven't connected on every single purchase that you've ever made, but there's enough big ones to say, okay, these guys know what they're doing. What are some of those things, Kevin, that when you start looking at a young horse, what are some of the boxes that horse absolutely has to check?
Well, first off, I mean, it's a physical thing we're looking for. You got to, they have to, you know, whenever people say you find the horse and then we open the page just to see how much it's going to cost. You don't care who he's by, really. It's just going to tell you how much you have to pay for him.
Yeah.
But so you're looking for an athlete. You'd like them to have a little stretch to them, but they still got to be fast. Good horses are fast. So, you know, everything everyone else likes, but they walk like an athlete, and they kind of unfold when they step, and they carry themselves well, and, you know, they got the right angle to the shoulder, and, you know, but more than, you know, how they handle themselves. At a step, at a run, at a jog, at a everything else, they're kind of, you're looking for them to be effortless. You want them to unfold, you know, when they move forward, they just kind of fall forward.
You said November Snow is probably your first big horse. What do you remember about the first time you laid eyes on November Snow?
She was beautiful. I mean, she was absolutely beautiful, and we actually. We took her to a sale. We took her to Miami, and it was the I had 16 in the sale, and it was the year the Gulf War started. And so no one bought any horses. No one was doing anything. We had started the ground war the day before the damn horse sale started. And so I was sitting down there with a whole shed row full of horses, and I ended up, I had Demolute, Demichute, and that consignment. I had three or four grade one horses in there and couldn't sell any of them.
Wow.
So it worked out fine. You know, they, at the time, they weren't mine. I was training horses for Lori Silvera and Clive Brooks, Silverbrook Stables out of Canada at the time, and he owned her. And we ended up selling both her and and Demolute to Wayne Lucas, I believe.
Wow.
Privately.
Yeah, yeah. When you think about that moment and, you know, you can't get anything sold and you're sitting there trying to get things started, what goes through your mind? Do you think, well, we got to find a better way to build this mousetrap, or what do you do?
We probably should have went to college. I don't know. This might not be the best pick. I think, you know, all we do is keep fighting forward. I didn't really know how to do anything else. I thought, you know, we were good at what we were doing. And but these horse sales and stuff like the public auction, they're tricky. You're not always selling them to the people that know either. So you got to somehow try to convince them. And you know, sometimes it ain't real easy.
You know, you also have a wonderful relationship over the years with Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. And there's names like Silver Charm and Real Quiet and Silver Bullet Day, Captain Steve, all of those horses that Bob trained that you were able to have a hand in picking out. How did that relationship come about?
Well, it came about because Bobby was just kind of starting off too, but actually he was starting off with Mike Pegram. And so they had a bigger wallet than us, and we kept landing on the same horses at the yearling sale every time, the same horses. And so we got to joking with him, and my brother JB told him that if he'd go ahead and leave, he'd upgrade his ticket to first class. And Bobby said, "I'm already flying first class." And he's like, "Damn it." And so that's kind. And then we just kind of hung out and chatted and enjoyed each other. And, you know, but we liked the same horses. We were always on the same animal. And so Bobby had just told us, if you ever see anything, you know, that you like, give me a call. And the first call we made was Silver Charm. So we bought Silver Charm in Ocala. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history.
So as you were watching Silver Charm win the Derby, win the Preakness, and go for the Triple Crown, your first one to partner with Bob Baffert, how cool was that for you?
Oh, it was like a dream come true. You just couldn't even believe you were there, and especially for Robert and Beverly Lewis. They were the best. They were the most gracious people and the most, they were pillars of this sport and always will be. So it was just so great to go through it with them because they put you on the front row, you know. I mean, they first class everything. And I mean, thank you every time he won. So it was a neat ride. And then, you know, we got lucky back to back and Real Quiet won it the next year. And then we started to thinking to ourselves, geez, this is easy. I don't know why people think this is so damn hard. And then we went on a little dry spell. But so it was a great run. And we ended up with Pharaoh after that. But, you know, pre-Pharaoh, we were second in the Derby five times before that.
Yeah.
It was like we were able and blessed to have our hands on some really nice horses. So,
you know, Kevin, I spend an awful lot of time visiting with Bob on this show and doing interviews throughout that Triple Crown with American Pharaoh, Victor Espinoza too. But I haven't ever asked you these questions, so I'm curious what the experience was like from your perspective as the person who was involved with selecting American Pharaoh, if you will.
Well, I tell you, we didn't select him because he was a homebred of Mr. Zion.
Yeah, correct. Okay.
But we broke and trained everything for Mr. Zion. So we broke and trained his father, and we broke and trained his mother.
Yep.
You know, the whole family. So I can't say I bought him. We just ended up with him, instantly you knew you were touching something fancy. I have a friend of mine that sells horses. Robert Brewer is his name. He's got horses here at Fazek today, and I can remember him coming to my farm. He was down in it might have been January, probably maybe November, January of that year, And he came to my farm, and he's walking around looking at all my horses. You know, at the time, I had, 140 in training. So I
yeah.
had a lot of horses to look at. And I walked him over. I said, Robert, I said, go in there and touch that horse. I said, just go in there and touch him. I said, because that will be the best horse you ever touched. And it was before I ever even breathed him. He was just like that. And Robert, he's giving me crap. Like, oh, I heard that. I know that. Or, you know this. He's giving me a bunch of junk. And then afterwards, he's like, you're right. That's the best horse I've ever touched.
Wow.
But so kind of funny. Maybe I just got a lucky guess that time, but sure had a feeling.
Yeah. Well, what was it about him that led you to believe this is the best horse he's ever going to touch?
He moved across the ground so effortlessly. He did things at a gallop horses can't do at a run. I mean, it was just absolutely, and he was spectacular. Like, you'd have to wake him up to training, and then when he got done bathing, he'd go back in and lay down again and take another nap. And you could go sit on him, you could sit on his back, you could lay down with him. He was just a different animal. And I know you watched him through the Triple Crown and have 500 reporters around him and people petting him. And he was just unshakable. He really was. And even to today, now that he's breeding horses, them stallions, they get tough and they get mean. Not him. You go over to him, you can still throw your kids on his back and give him pony rides around on him. He's just a different kind. He really is.
Yeah, I went to see him out there at Coolmore, and I had no issues turning my back when I was standing next to him because I knew that he was just a big puppy dog.
No, he's neat. I'll tell you, like, they don't give me the whole dog and pony show, right? But they'll just tell me to go out in the damn field and see him if you want to see him. And I go out there, and he's like a pony. I mean, but like I said, just – when he stepped forward, he was doing it faster than anything. He was when he galloped, he'd gallop him to death. Like, he couldn't. First time we breezed him, it's like, oh, can't breathe in with anything else again. I mean, first off, he'd go too fast, and then he'd tear the heart out of anything you stuck him with, so that wasn't working. And he was just always a different kind. He was just better.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very, very special. Still is.
Special just to have any part of it.
Talking with trainer Kevin McCathen here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton in advance of this year's Preakness Stakes. If you're just tuning into the show, Kevin will saddle Longshot Fenwick coming up on Saturday afternoon, and hoping to continue the theme of Longshots winning Triple Crown races here in 2022. You don't have to worry about the Derby winner, but, boy, that's a pretty loaded field, Kevin.
I do. I know. I think it is. I mean, there's some in there you're going to have to outrun, without a doubt. I don't think it's an easy spot. We're not necessarily going because it's easy. But I think it kind of opened up a hair, to where it was worth taking the shot and giving him another. I just want him to run his race. If they beat him, they beat him. Okay, that's great. But I want him to have a fair, a fair shake at it. He deserves it. And I think, I don't lead him over there to just embarrass myself. And that's not my plan, But,
yeah.
And if it happens, we'll drop back and punt and find another spot, but I think right now, there's some horses in there that's tough, but hey, at one point, it ain't even bad to run third in the Preakness, It won't look bad on the poster if he's ever a stallion. So, but I do think he belongs in there. I think he, if he gets his race, they're going to have to deal with it.
Well, and you have some remarkable similarities. Your story is very similar in some ways to Eric Reed, who lost horses in a barn fire, lost his young grandson in an automobile accident. He lost two of his best friends, his assistant trainers that worked with him, who died suddenly. And you had a situation in 2019 where you lost your brother, JB, who we talked about earlier. He died suddenly of a heart attack. Your dad passed away earlier this year. You told me in that interview that we aired on Equine Forum that the decisions that you're making now, you always think, what would JB, what would he have wanted to do? And I can only imagine that, boy, they're going to be smiling down on you and Fenwick on Saturday, my friend.
I think smiling, hopefully not laughing, but hopefully smiling. But I know my dad would be like, what are you doing? What is this crazy guy doing? But, you know, I mean, I think they have to smile at me, and hopefully they'll reach down and touch us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm sure they're very, very proud of everything you've been able to accomplish. You know, certainly when they were here on Earth and now looking down at you too, I know it's going to be a special day for you. How many friends and family members will be at the Preakness with you?
Well, unfortunately, all of Timonium thinks I'm going to take them over there, but they're a little tight on tickets over there. So, I think that it's just going to be, you know, close family and the people that are here with me right now. You know, it's kind of really for the guys that own the horse. I can't be, you know, I can take over as many as I can, and I'd love to take all these people. I love them all, but they're tight over there on them tickets.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you mentioned the Timonium, and I talked about that at the beginning of our conversation here today, too. It doesn't stop. You're going to go to the Preakness, saddle Fenwick, and then after that, you have to go right back over to work at the sale because you're going to be selling horses there. How many horses will you be selling, Kevin?
I have four. I have four over here, so I'm not overran, and I got lucky today. My horse shipped in today, got off the van this morning at 6 a.m., and I was lucky I didn't have anything to breeze today. So it kind of worked out well, and I breezed one yesterday, and I got three breezing tomorrow. So we're going to get up early, and we're going to go over and get him cruised around the track and let him look at all the crazy tents and things going on over there, and then I'll be right back here at the Breeze Show.
Yeah, Kevin, let's go win the middle jewel of the Triple Crown, my friend.
That'd be awesome.
All right, I appreciate you taking a little time. Thanks for being with me here on Trainer Talk. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, Kevin McCathen here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Yeah, remarkable similarities. The things that Kevin has gone through in recent years and earlier this year losing his dad, you know, similar to the loss that Eric Reed experienced in a lot of ways. And, boy, can you imagine? Longest shot in the Preakness, Fenwick, jump up and win it. They'll be on the go from the start. You can believe that. They'll be out in front. All right, my thanks to Kevin for taking time. I'm going to be back with more right after this short break. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Phasic Tipton Mid-Atlantic 2-Year-Olds in Training Sale, showcasing more than 600 juveniles, all on a dirt racetrack. Recent Grade 1 winners include Beyond Brilliant, Gamine, Gut Stormy, and Switzerland. Graded stakes winners Informative and Morello, plus stakes winners from coast to coast. Among the nation's top juvenile sales by Grade 1 wins. Join us after the Preakness, May 23rd and 24th in Timonium, Maryland. Where will you be?
It's time now for the first bet of the week, presented by First Bet.
This week's first bet comes in Thursday's eighth race at Pimlico with a post of 4:35 Eastern. Number 7, Heartness, is 9-2 on the morning line, has a 20% win projection from First Bet and offers fair odds to 4-1, rates 6 points higher than the next closest competitor, and has high percentage connections. Trainer Jamie Ness and jockey Jaime Rodriguez are 33% together in 2022, according to BetMix. And Heartness comes into Thursday's race with 8 straight top 4 finishes. Number 7, Heartness, in race 8 at Pimlico on Thursday, is your first bet of the week.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races. Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.